We're out in the yard.
This calls for the old Billy Baruch.
It's the Rosie on the House Show with Bill Jenkins of Think Green Irrigation and Landscaping.
Billy.
Call with your questions at 1-888-ROSIE-4-U.
That never gets old for me.
Billy Jenkins here talking landscape, gardening, and hardscape at Rosie on the House. We were on the topic of state fruit. Arizona has no state fruit.
But I have a vote for one.
You have a vote for one.
Mm-hmm, the prickly pear.
I would vote for that.
The tuna of the prickly pear. It's time to harvest.
Boy, they are. Were we driving just the other day?
Just the neighborhood.
56th Street, south of the 101.
Mm-hmm. All up by Mayo up there.
Oh, man. There was like an entire crop of gorgeous, deep, ruby red fruit ready to go.
I called my friend Alta out in New River. I'm going to take a trip out there. It's an annual event for us. Lots of fond memories of being out in the heat harvesting prickly pear with little kids and picking stickers out of fingers. But it's a great fruit. It's really good for you. Lots of good nutrients and stuff. So I'm just going to go out and harvest a bunch. You have about a month now. There's some ready. There's some still getting ready.
Harvesting tips. That's a prickly pear. Lots of thorns.
Gloves. And tongs. And if it's ripe, you're gonna reach up and just barely have to knock it off. And take a big bucket. And then I'm going to do it different this year. I've always burned each little tuna to try to get the needles off. But desertharvesters.org out of Tucson, they have a great website, by the way. Lots of good tips on harvesting. So you just put it in the sink and swish them around. And then you fill a colander with a pillowcase. You grind the fruit up in the blender, throw it in there, and just mash it through.
Needles and all.
Yeah.
The whole fruit.
But with the pillowcase, the needle's not going to go through with the juice.
Okay.
So I'm going to try that this year and just make juice. I'm not doing the jelly thing.
Oh, come on. I love the
It always
the
turns
jelly.
Into syrup for
I
me.
I love
it
the jelly.
It's not easy to set because there's not enough pectin in it. So you know, if you do it, you have to mix it with apple.
But I will say prickly pear syrup is not as good.
It's great in teas, in lemonade, just refreshing up your water. It is a great little treat. So,
what was that website?
It's desertharvesters.org. Did you have something else?
But just watch for snakes.
Watch for snakes. And spiders. I mean, it's
you're in the desert.
You're in the desert.
There's a lot of little critters that love to hide in prickly pear because it is a protective against the hawks and sky predators. But you know, ground predators know that little mice and things go in there, and that's a good place to kick up a snake.
Wear a hat. Bring lots of water. You know. Also on that desertharvester.org.
Mm-hmm.
There's a class coming up August 16th in Tucson. You can go on that website and find out. It tells you how to harvest the prickly pear and lots of good recipes. They're going to teach you how to do it and what to do with it.
Oh, that's cool.
But the thing I really love about that website is they have a whole section on rain harvesting, which I think makes so much sense for here. It has to do with, you know, gathering the rain as it comes down, making your yard so that it grabs the water and waters your plants. And, Bill, you had a lot of good input on that.
Sure. I mean, it's free water. And I have learned through some research that many of the desert trees, palaverdes and mesquites, if you do correct passive rain harvesting, where you're doing the contouring and grading and holding the rainwater that comes off roofs and off the property and keep them in the canopy of the tree, you can virtually keep those alive on rainfall alone. And you may want to do some supplemental watering in the heat for them to look a little bit better, but why not take advantage of the fact that, you know, what falls out of the sky will keep them happy, keep them alive. It's really easy to do if you're doing a landscape project. Just consider the contouring and grading to hold the water and still be mindful of the fact you need to give water on your property a place to go so it's never going to build up against the structure.
Rain harvesting and water storage is actually a much bigger thing down in Pima County than it is here in Maricopa
County. Very much
so.
Yeah. Tucson really is big on that. There's a lot of rules, commercial properties, they have to do it. Not as much up here in the valley. We're still getting acclimated to the concepts, and there are some rules involved in it.
Yeah, Yavapai County is pretty big on it as well.
Well, should be.
Makes
a
lot of sense.
It's a great,
sure.
Yeah, great idea.
You just got to store it in a way to keep it mosquito-free.
Mm-hmm.
But anybody, that website demonstrates a lot of the equipment that's available, and it's pretty well-refined system now.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of passive water harvesting, of course, isn't tanks or anything to maintain those systems. It's just basically intelligent grading.
I have a friend in Tucson, Catherine Kent. She actually owns a solar store. She rain harvests to a cistern that feeds the control box of her irrigation system, and then she has an automatic flip that when that, if for any reason, has run dry, then she goes back to city water. But she uses all of that water.
It's an excellent idea.
It
I
is.
Think it'll continue to catch on.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to join the conversation. Claire in Tucson writes in and says, my lantana refuses to bloom. Fertilize it twice earlier in the season. And absolutely nothing. And we were talking earlier, that's one thing that any black thumb should start with.
Lantana.
To encourage yourself.
Well,
are we sure it's a lantana?
Yeah, I was actually my first question was, are we dealing with a lantana here? I've seen some of the varieties, the whites and purples are a little bit more delicate. May not be getting enough water, and also sunlight. Need to make sure it's getting plenty of sun. If you have one of the varieties in a very shady area, it's not going to be very prone to blooming. So the other thing you can do is a fertilizer that's high in that middle number, your nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, your phosphorus, that likes to encourage blooming. Miracle-Gro is an easy solution there.
And then Katie writes in, her mother bought a home in Sorita. That's a little south of Tucson, north of Green Valley.
Driven through it a few times?
Purchased. Wants a little privacy screen, but does not want blocks, you know, or a fence. She's not out there to look at fencing. But still wants a little privacy screen. Ended up buying a bunch of oleanders, little five-gallon starters. So in preparing to get this planted, somebody tells them, those are poisonous,
yes,
and you should get rid of them and plant something else.
All parts of the plant are poisonous. And not that we're out chewing on our oleanders, but that is something to be aware of. Something a little more imaginative that I like is to use the members of the Tacoma family or the orange bells, yellow bells. Those are just really easy replacements for an oleander. A lot more color, too.
Now, Dad has a hedge of oleanders that we played in growing up for years and years and years. And you know, it's arguable, but it hadn't negatively affected us, I don't think.
it's amazing, as poisonous as oleanders are, that you don't hear more often of people being harmed one way or another. Because y'all did. Y'all climbed through those oleanders like it was a fort, you know?
Oh, and when you got
surface scratches and all
kinds of
things.
You could pull a leaf, and it would strip the bark, and it would be perfect for your ropes. And we had, you know, tied all kinds of things together, and we thought we were Indians, and had a great time in
kids.
The oleander's hedge.
Yeah.
Now, you had brought up an interesting story, though, about how somebody did get poisoned by an
oleander. This is kind of embarrassing. I heard a story, and someone had taken some oleanders, stripped the leaves off, and used them as spears for marshmallows in the fire, campfire, and that can get you sick.
Not good.
So don't do that.
Don't use it for marshmallow roast.
Nope.
All right, very good. Let's go to Bruce and Mesa. Welcome to the conversation, talking Bermuda lawns. Welcome, Bruce.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a lawn that I've had in for about 26 years in East Mesa, and with a good sprinkler system, whatever. I never had any real issues. I usually plant ryegrass in the winter, and the rye does great. What I'm experiencing now, I've got big dead areas or brown areas because I've got a citrus tree in the middle of the lawn. That's been there the whole time as well. But the last couple of years, the grass has kind of died out. Now, I've had somebody tell me that there's like a maturity on, and it's a hybrid TIF is what I put in originally, that the grass will die out and you have to resod. So I just kind of wanted to find out what my options are. I've tried several different things, you know, to soften the ground, do whatever, but I'm just not having a lot of success.
I'm not aware of a longevity or life limit on Bermuda grass hybrid. I've seen lawns that are many more years older than that and thriving and doing well. One of the things you brought up, you have a citrus tree. I'm sure 26 years later, that citrus is a lot bigger than when it was planted. And one thing Bermuda grass does not like, even the hybrids, is any kind of shade. You mentioned you did a winter lawn. What I would be interested in is, do you have shade under that tree that kept some of that rye going longer than we should have? perhaps the transition last spring should have been more aggressive to get rid of that ryegrass, because ryegrass will do that. It'll hang on till about now, and then it just gives up and you get a big brown area. The Bermuda then isn't there to fill in because it's been held back by the rye growing. So this may be more of a maintenance issue. It's also a landscape issue if we have shade. You really need 6 or 8 hours, really more like 8 hours, to keep that Bermuda grass happy. So that could
like
be an
issue. I got a couple of things fighting me there, and one is the shade from the tree partially. The sun does sneak in there on the west side, so I get a 3-4 hours maybe of sun that goes in on the west side.
Which is not enough. That's not enough to grow happy Bermuda grass. Really, I think the issue there is shade, and I bet you if you go looking, you'll see dead rye in those areas.
Now, you had mentioned earlier, Bill in Buckeye was asking about a ground cover that you said does great in shade. Would that be an option for him to put underneath the...
You can do that. You could mix some dichondra in underneath. Can do some fescue. That's a type of seeded lawn that likes a little more shade. You end up, in my experience, with a little bit of that no man's land of an area where, you know,
nothing
the two
happy.
Aren't right. Neither one's happy. A little too much sun, a little too much shade. And so it's better than having mud under the tree. As a landscape designer, we typically just simply try to avoid that situation. We might even modify the landscape, make a planter area, grow a shady ground cover in the area instead of trying to grow turf.
Well, there you go, Bruce. Open up the sunlight or just or understand that that's going to be your Bermuda.
Yeah, make the square peg fit into a square hole rather than trying to put it in a round hole.
1-888-767-4348 as we move through our calls. Doug, on irrigation, welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, as I turn, you know, I got that, you know, my, you know, the drip and the, you know, the pop-up sprinklers. If I turn it on manually, it works. But, you know, going through my, you know, that box on the side of my house.
Right.
Is the box bad? Do I have to get a new box or what? How do I know if a box is bad or, you know?
If I understand correctly. He can turn it on manually, but it's not firing automatically.
And that, there's another question that needs to be asked manually at the controller, at the timer or timer box or whatever we want to call that, or manually at the control valve.
We'll figure that out right after this.